for the Macs so that they received another hour of computer training. We knew then that the fix was in. They were trying to just do minimal changes to get that Macs up in the air. We were, you know, on the floor. I mean, we were just grieving. We're trying to recover, and then we realized, you know, we have to go to Washington. All the while, my wife Nadia was and I were connecting with families, family members, crash families. We're reaching out to each other, connected in a WhatsApp group, connected in other ways, and Nadia and I went to Washington and met with 56 different members of the Senate Commerce Committee and House Transportation Committee.
We have 20 seconds.
Our story every time. And the getting the families to Washington with the pictures many times in front of the decision makers was difficult but important to let them know what was at stake.
And we will continue to follow the pressure you're bringing on the Attorney General and on Boeing on the what will come out of this horror that took place. Michael Stumo, father of Samia Stumo, who died in the Ethiopian Airlines crash, and Rory Kennedy, director of Downfall, the case against Boeing. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Portland.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon health officials urge people not to delay getting their vaccine booster as the state reports thousands of new COVID-19 cases per day. More than 11,000 Portland City trade workers announced their intent to strike. And in international news, the vast buildup of Russian troops on Ukraine's border continues, while the Kremlin repeatedly denies it has plans to invade. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 28th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. A labor coalition representing about 16% of the Portland City workforce announced yesterday that a strike is imminent. The president of the District Council of Trade Unions, Robert Martineau, said the coalition had directed the chief negotiator to notify Portland that workers do plan to strike. A strike can start 10 days after the city is informed. The DCTU represents Portland workers in six unions. Members provide services to keep the city operational, including vehicle repairs, water treatment, and building inspections. Negotiations over a new contract and new wages have been going on for 2 years, but they recently stalled. The city offered a 1.6% cost of living adjustment retroactive to last July, and another 5% adjustment this summer, plus a $3,000 bonus for DCTU members. Union members say this does not keep up with inflation and that they are asking for wages competitive with the private sector. For the second time, the Oregon Court of Appeals upheld a state civil rights division ruling finding an Oregon bakery illegally discriminated against a same-sex couple. In 2013, Laurel and Rachel Bowman Cryer filed a complaint against Sweet Cakes by Melissa, claiming the bakery refused to make them a wedding cake. The Bureau of Labor and Industries investigated and found the bakery had violated the couple's civil rights. The owners, Melissa and Aaron Klein, appealed the decision, claiming baking a cake for a same-sex wedding went against their Christian beliefs. The Oregon Court of Appeals affirmed the Civil Rights Division ruling in 2015. However, the U.S. Supreme Court vacated that ruling 4 years later. The Supreme Court directed the state appellate court to review its decision in light of the 2018 court case. In a similar case in Colorado, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a baker who refused to sell a wedding cake to a gay couple, saying the Colorado Civil Rights Commission was openly hostile to religion. This week, the Oregon Court of Appeals also found the Bureau of Labor and Industries did not exhibit religious neutrality in issuing a $135,000 fine to Sweet Cakes. The court asked the Civil Rights Division to reassess that fine. The division had issued its penalty based at least partly on a statement by the bakery owner quoting a biblical verse. The court felt the statement was incorrectly relayed to the couple and may have biased the fine amounts. The couple's attorney, Jennifer Pizer, said, quote, "The court was right 5 years ago and is still right today. The client's faith does not give them a pass to ignore Oregon's public accommodation law," end quote. The Oregon Health Authority reported more than 7,000 new confirmed and presumptive cases of COVID-19 on Thursday. So far, the state has reported more than 613,000 cases of COVID-19. Oregon health officials also announced 19 new deaths, raising the state's death toll to 6,067 people. There are currently more than 1,100 people hospitalized with COVID-19 in Oregon, including 169 patients in intensive care units. Hospital bed capacity is still low across the state. There is 9% availability of adult ICU beds and just 6% availability for adult non-ICU beds. Health officials continue to urge people to get vaccinated and get their booster shot if they have not yet done so. The Alsea School District in Benton County recently announced that they will be making masks optional for students attending classes in person. The Oregon Department of Education has responded to this announcement by withholding COVID-19 relief funds from the district. In a statement emailed to the Oregonian, Mark Thielman, the superintendent of the district, explained that his decision is based on data that show that masking has little to no effect in slowing the spread of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. Thielman offered little explanation in his statement as to why the district has decided to remove the mask requirement entirely instead of updating it to mandate more heavy-duty masks that are proven to be effective. State education officials said, quote, "The Oregon Department of Education does not support the decision in Alsea School District. They added that by eliminating a mask requirement, quote, they should expect rapid transmission of COVID-19 that will prevent students from participating in in-person learning," end quote. The Alsea School District is already experiencing rapid transmission of COVID-19, even with the mask mandate in place. Schools in the district are currently closed due to the number of teachers who have tested positive and are in quarantine. Thielman intends to stick to eliminating the mask mandate, despite the loss of funding. Masks will become optional in the district starting Monday. Free N95 masks are arriving at pharmacies and grocery stores across the country. KBOO's Kristen Backus spoke with Dr. Nikki Barz-McCullough, a scientist at 3M, a company that manufactures personal protective equipment, about why N95 masks are so important.
N95 masks will soon become available for free at drugstores like CVS and Walgreens. Experts say these masks are the most effective in stopping the spread of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. Today, we sit down with Dr. Nikki Barz-McCullough, a scientist at 3M, which is a company known for manufacturing these masks and other health and safety products.
To start off, would you mind introducing yourself?
My name is Nikki Barz-McCullough, and I'm a scientist here at 3M Company.
Thank you. And so, yeah, we're here today to talk to you about N95 masks. The Biden administration is going to make N95 masks widely available through drugstores like CVS and Walgreens, which are recommended for the Omicron surge we're seeing right now. Why is it important for people to be wearing N95 this time around?
Because the Omicron variant is so very infectious, of the different face coverings that we have available to us, the N95s are going to be the most protective. And so they're going to help, you know, reduce people's exposure to Omicron if it's in the air.
How do N95 respirators work?
N95 respirators have this really sophisticated filter media in them, and it can filter out really big particles like pollen or really, really small particles like the ones that might contain viruses. And when you put them on and they seal to your face, it means the air that you're breathing is actually going through that filter media, so it's getting filtered.
So there's an N95 mask and a KN95 mask. What's the difference between them, and is one of them more effective?
N95 respirators are the meet the U.S. standards, the U.S. government standards, and they're approved in the U.S. A lot of them, like 3Ms, we make them here in the U.S., and we've designed them to fit the faces of the U.S. population. Each country tends to have their own regulations around respirator masks, and so the KN95 meet the China regulations.
With all this new focus on N95s and folks scrambling to get the right protective equipment, there's bound to be some fakes on the market too. What advice do you have for people when buying a mask to avoid buying fake ones?
There are concerns about fake N95s on the market, and it's important that you do some research when you're looking to purchase them. First of all, make sure you're buying from a store that you trust, whether it's online or it's a retail store that you trust it. You look for a name brand of the manufacturer that you trust. And then also look out for things like, you know, are the words all spelled correctly? Does the English have good grammar? And if you have any doubts, you can always contact the manufacturer. For example, we have a website, which is 3m.com/myN95, and that's going to give people a lot of tips for how to find an authentic N95.
I'm sure you and everyone listening has at one time or another seen someone wearing surgical masks or cloth masks wrong. This is important, though, because an ill-fitting mask makes them less effective. Do you have tips for people wanting to ensure their masks do fit correctly?
Sure. With N95 respirators, obviously they need to go over your nose and mouth, but you really need to make sure that you're using both of the headbands, and one headband should go around your neck, and the other headband should go at the crown of your head. And then you want to make sure that you're pushing down that metal clip over the nose really firmly. And this will help make sure that the edge of the respirator is touching your face all the way around. So when you breathe, the air is going through that filter media, and there's no air sneaking in around the edges of the mask.
And is it safe to reuse a mask? And if so, how many times can you do that safely?
Now, the N95 respirators, they're designed to be put on and taken off a number of times. So it's important that you treat them carefully. But if they get dirty or damaged, then you want to get a new one. So you can reuse them as long as those straps are still keeping it tight against your face. And as long as that metal nose clip can still make a good firm seal around your nose. But if it gets too dirty or it breaks, then it's time to get a new one.
Okay, and who should be looking for an N95 mask when they become available? Are N95s recommended for children?
N95s are really recommended for adults, and they're recommended for when you're in, you know, crowded situations as part of all of the things that we can do, like vaccination and distancing, to help reduce cases of COVID. N95s are really made for adult faces, so very young children might find them too big, and they might need to find a different type of mask.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. This has been really helpful. Our listeners really appreciate the insight on the N95s.
Great. Thank you so much.
That was an interview with Dr. Nikki Vars-McCullough, a scientist and expert on N95 masks at 3M. N95 masks will soon become available for free at pharmacies and drugstores around the country. With KBOO News, I'm Caitlin Backus.
Legislation in the Washington State Senate would create a prescription drug affordability board to cap the growing cost of medications for Washingtonians. Eric Tegetoff has more on the story.
Washington state lawmakers are considering a measure to limit the growing cost of prescription drugs. Senate Bill 5532 would establish a prescription drug affordability board, which would convene a panel of experts to cap the prices of medications. Four states, including Colorado and Maryland, already have boards. Senator Karen Kaiser introduced the legislation. She says when people can't afford medication, they skip doses or even try to get by without their prescriptions.
We have data to show that people's health goes down. There is more death. There is more suffering when prices go up. And prices have been going up relentlessly and really outrageously.
The legislation is scheduled for an executive session in the Senate Committee on Health and Long-Term Care today. In opposition, Reed Porter, a spokesperson for the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, says the bill would hurt pharmaceutical innovation. The organization is instead supporting Senate Bill 5888, which Porter says is a patient-centered solution that utilizes rebates to bring down drug costs. John Barnett is 91 years old and lives in Kirkland. A year ago, he went to the hospital for an irregular heartbeat, where they prescribed a drug that he will need to take twice a day for the rest of his life. But he was shocked to find out the medication costs $6,000 a year.
I would rather spend that $6,000 a year on something that's enjoyable or beneficial, something like that. But if I want to stay alive and see my grandkids grow up, I guess I've got to continue to take that.
Seth Greiner is with the Northwest chapter of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society and notes that MS is a chronic disease that usually requires lifelong therapies. He says five of the most common disease-modifying therapies for MS are priced at more than $100,000 a year. Greiner says 40% of respondents to a 2019 survey they conducted said they had altered their use of treatments due to cost.
We believe that both innovation and affordable access are critical to ensuring that people receive the medications and treatments they need, but these medications can only be accessed if people can afford them.
I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Lewis and Clark College has announced their new president will be Robin Holmes Sullivan. Holmes Sullivan will be the first woman and first black person to become president of the private liberal arts college in the school's 150-year history. Holmes Sullivan will step into the role in July after current president Wim Weaver retires. Holmes Sullivan currently serves as Dean of Students and Vice President of Student Life for the college. Holmes Sullivan said, quote, "It's obviously something that is going to be, and is, very meaningful to me and to our school, and also to the young people who will be looking at me as someone they can feel inspired by. They can realize that they can dream big," end quote. Prior to Lewis and Clark, Holmes Sullivan worked for the University of California system as Vice President of Student Affairs. Before that, she spent almost 3 decades at the University of Oregon. According to the college, the Lewis and Clark Board of Trustees selected Holmes Sullivan as president following a nationwide search that attracted over 100 applicants. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, featuring senior policy strategist at the Center for Popular Democracy, Natalia Renta, discussing a debt restructuring deal for Puerto Rico. Then at 6, it's Let's Talk About Race. And at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear skies with a low of 30 degrees. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy with a high of 50 degrees. Today in history, in 1986, the Space Shuttle Challenger lifts off from Cape Canaveral, Florida. 73 seconds later, hundreds on the ground and millions more tuning in to live television watched in disbelief as the shuttle broke up in a plume of smoke and fire. There were no survivors. The quote of the day is from South African anti-apartheid revolutionary and political leader Nelson Mandela, who served as the first president of South Africa. Mandela said, quote, "For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others," end quote. Moscow's top diplomat said today that Russia will not start a war in Ukraine. He added, however, that Russia will also not allow the West to walk all over its security interests. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said in a live interview, quote, "There won't be a war as far as it depends on the Russian Federation. We don't want a war, but we won't let our interests be rudely trampled on and ignored," end quote. Russia has recently built up more than 100,000 troops near its border with Ukraine. Russian leaders have demanded that NATO promise Ukraine will never be allowed to join the organization, and the troops and military equipment deployed in Eastern Europe be removed. The US and NATO have formally rejected those demands, increasing concerns Moscow might attack Ukraine. The U.S. has detailed areas where discussions are still possible. Russia has not formally responded, but the Kremlin did say previously there is little ground for optimism. Lavrov repeated that sentiment today. He said, quote, "While they say they won't change their positions, we won't change ours. I don't see any room for compromise here," end quote. Russian President Vladimir Putin opened a Security Council meeting today, aiming to address foreign policy issues. He also told the French president that the U.S. and NATO failed to consider Russia's key demands. Putin did, however, speak in favor of continuing talks regarding a stalled peace agreement for eastern Ukraine, where Russian-backed rebels are fighting Ukrainian forces. Presidential envoys from Russia, Ukraine, France, and Germany will meet in Berlin in 2 weeks for further discussions. The U.S. warned Russia about major economic sanctions and penalties targeting top Russian officials if a Ukraine invasion occurs. The U.S. added Germany would not allow a newly constructed pipeline aimed at bringing gas directly from Russia to begin operations. Russia believes imposing the sanctions would amount to a complete severance of ties. In the meantime, Ukrainian officials have tried to keep things calm. The defense minister told Parliament today that the total number of Russian troops near Ukraine compares to last spring, when Russia was conducting military exercises. The minister said Ukraine has not observed anything differently recently in terms of events or actions of military character. Justice Stephen Breyer formally announces his retirement. The U.S. Department of Education will help students who fell behind during the pandemic, and Arizona lawmakers consider a bill granting them control over elections. With more on the story, it's Jonah Chester with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
It's a kind of miracle when you sit there and see all those people in front of you, people that are so different in what they think. And yet they've decided to help solve their major differences under law.
Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer formally announced his resignation today, effective at the end of the court's current term in June. Breyer was appointed to the position by President Bill Clinton in 1994 and is the court's oldest justice at 83. Breyer's retirement will give President Joe Biden a chance to maintain the court's current balance of 6 conservatives to 3 liberals for the foreseeable future. President Biden says he plans to announce Breyer's replacement before March.
And that person will be the first black woman ever nominated to the United States Supreme Court.
In a conversation with the Washington Post, House Democratic Whip Jim Clyburn threw his support behind J. Michelle Childs, a former South Carolina federal district judge and recent appointee to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
The fact of the matter is, I have been discussing Michelle Childs with the president and his people now for, I guess, at least 13 months.
Politico reports the U.S. economy grew by 5.7% last year, and a positive sign the nation is recovering from the pandemic-induced recession of 2020. The growth marks the strongest single-year uptick in nearly 4 decades. U.S. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona says the department will shift its focus in the coming year to help students who fell behind during the pandemic. The plan comes after school districts across the country have been in and out of virtual education in recent weeks as the Omicron variant has disrupted communities.
Our schools must offer increased access to mental health support for students, wraparound programs, meaningful and authentic parent and family engagement, and interventions for those students who felt the impact of the pandemic much more bluntly than others.
According to the Department of Education, about 96% of the nation's schools are currently open for in-person education. A proposed bill in Arizona would allow the state's Republican legislature to unilaterally overturn election results. The Hill reports the measure would require the legislature to meet after an election to review processes and results. Lawmakers would then, quote, accept or reject the election results, unquote. The bill would also significantly restrict early and absentee voting. And the U.S. Department of Transportation has released a plan to address increasing traffic deaths across the country. In a report issued Thursday, the department outlined a plan which, among other things, calls for partnering with states to reduce drunken driving and designing safer roads. According to the New York Times, U.S. traffic deaths have surged in recent years, climbing from about 36,000 in 2019 to 38,700 in 2020. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Navajo Nation examines helium extraction to create revenue. the Australian government strikes a deal for free use of the Aboriginal flag, and the English Exeter Rugby Club will drop its Native American-themed logo. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation Council is considering a bill to expand helium extraction on areas of the reservation in New Mexico and Arizona. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports leaders are eager to create revenue and jobs after recent coal mining losses.
The bill would approve agreements for two projects north of Gallup, New Mexico, and one west of Chinle, Arizona, proposed by the tribally owned Navajo Nation Oil and Gas Company. Navajo Council Speaker Seth Damon is its sponsor and says the projects would generate jobs, economic development, and much-needed annual revenue. The tribe lost tens of millions of dollars in 2019 after the closure of the coal-fired Navajo Generating Station and nearby Kayenta mine that supplied it. During recent discussions about the helium production bill, Council Delegate Amber Canisbaugh-Crotty, however, called for further dialogue on the possible public health impacts of extraction. The Navajo Nation has produced helium for decades, along with oil and gas, but company executives say there are dozens more possible sites that could eventually generate $1 billion for the tribe and royalties for local chapters and youth scholarships. The nearby Holbrook Basin in eastern Arizona is thought to have some of the largest reserves of the element in the U.S. and has even been called the Saudi Arabia of helium. But environmental groups and some residents have raised concerns about how extraction methods could impact the environment and water resources. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The Australian government has struck a deal with the copyright holders of the Aboriginal flag to ensure free public use of the design following years of negotiations. Adam Evans from the National Indigenous Radio Service has more.
The flag was designed by Luritja artist Harold Thomas in 1971, who until now had retained the copyright for the symbol. The flag has since been used by Aboriginal people around the country as a symbol to unite and represent. The First Nations community have used the flag and its colours on just about anything from clothing and jewellery, media, tattoos, and even on their cars. Controversy began in 2019 when multiple organisations, including Indigenous-led organisations, were sent cease and desist letters for their use of the design on clothing. It was then many around the country found that the flag's designer, Harold Thomas, had granted the exclusive use of the Aboriginal flag on clothing, physical and digital media, to non-Indigenous company Wham Clothing in 2018. Two national sporting codes, the National Rugby League and the Australian Football League, were also sent cease and desist letters for their use of the design. The Free the Flag campaign was then born and called for a change to the licensing agreements. This week, the Australian government announced that the Aboriginal flag is now free to be used by all Australians. While the terms of the deal are not yet known, the purchase of the copyright cost $20 million.
That was Adam Evans. An English rugby team is dropping its Native American-themed Chiefs logo. In a video message Thursday, the Exeter Rugby Club announced its new identity. The new brand, launching this summer, draws from a Celtic Iron Age tribe. The change comes after a two-year review process. The team will keep its Chiefs name. The logo will change from a Native American image to elements representing Celtic history. The old logo features a Native American with a headdress. The new logo features a Celtic helmet known to be worn in and around 300 BC. A two-minute video posted on the team's website talks about the change. Team officials say times are changing and so are they, adding they're excited to welcome a next era of rugby. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 28th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Caitlin Backus and Josh Salem. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Jonah Chester, Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegetoff, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, a judge has approved a debt restructuring deal for Puerto Rico, and the deal's architects are saying it means a new day for the territory. Natalia Renta is senior policy strategist at the Center for Popular Democracy. We'll hear from her about what those outside of the deal-making, but nevertheless impacted by it, have to say. That's coming up, but first, a very quick look at some recent press. It's remarkable, elite media's eagerness, amid all the crying problems and difficulties we're facing, to beat the drums for a hot war with Russia. It's remarkable how little need is felt to go beyond an age-old playbook, which includes, first, an effort to get out in front and assert that the enemy is lying, even if it's true. In January 25th, Russia steps up propaganda war amid tensions with Ukraine. The New York Times asserts that, quote, Moscow and its online army of allies have pushed out old arguments about Western Ukrainians being aligned with Nazism, close quote. Note the paper avoids saying these are false arguments.